Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. And we're broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. So the NFL draft is behind us. Joining us now to break it all down is Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, and of course, head coach of the Ensworth Tigers. Tim, J.C. Latham is the Titans' first-round pick at number 7. Rand Carthon said even though he played right tackle at Alabama, he intends to swing him over to left tackle. What was your initial impression of the pick, and what gives you confidence, if at all, that J.C. Yeah. Latham can make that transition to the left side?
So I guess I would have to go back a few picks. Not to say that I was like totally surprised that the Chargers went with Joe Alt.
No, I'm surprised.
I think that it definitely was like, oh, okay, like there you go. But I've said it to you guys before, like, listen, whether you go 5 or 7, like, look, if you're good enough to go at 7, then you should be good enough to go at 5. And, you know, we maybe talk team need and things of that nature. But like from the time Jim Harbaugh coached it, you know, San Diego to Stanford to the Niners, like he likes to run the football. So that's obviously the direction he was headed. You know, in terms of Latham, like he obviously is a huge man that has, you know, that played well at the college level. Now to move from right to left, I think we talked a little bit about it last week. I think it's hard. I think that it's, it shouldn't be a given. And I think sometimes people think, all right, we'll try to swing you over there, and if it doesn't work, then we'll just move you back. And so I don't really know what the true belief on it is, but I think it's harder than advertised. And, you know, that would generally be my concern, but he's obviously a super talented guy.
And then the second round pick, Devondre Sweat, the defensive tackle out of Texas. And the reports were a lot of general managers dropped him down on their boards, if not took him off entirely, just given the DWI 2 weeks before the draft. And then, of course, the concerns about his playing weight at Texas. A lot of the commentary, at least nationally, has been that the Titans reached for their first two rounds of the draft. J.C. Latham at 7 and then Devondre Sweat at 38. What are your thoughts on, you know, quote-unquote reaching in the draft? Because I know some might say, well, if you love the players, it doesn't matter where you take him. But some might say, well, the value is important in the draft, especially when you're drafting as high as the Titans were.
Yeah, I think a lot of times the people say the reach, you know, somebody's a reach, they say it based on, you know, what mock drafts were. And, look, I think we know. Just look at the if you just look at mock drafts and look at them after the draft, like a lot of times they're off, right? And like not everybody knows, you know, the rankings on people's boards. Like I know probably a lot of people have said, hey, well, that's a reach for Michael Penix. Well, I mean, clearly not for Atlanta, you know, because that's where they had him. Or look, Spencer Rattler goes in the 5th round. Like had someone taken Spencer Rattler in the 3rd round, like would anyone have been saying like, hey, that was a reach? Like, I don't, you know, I don't think they would. And so I think that, you know, the hard part on saying something is a reach is you don't always know, like it just really takes one other team to like a player. And, you know, you're also trying to forecast what you think a team will do based on their visits, based on, you know, what you think that team need is, like all those different factors. And so like, I just don't know that we ever really know when something was truly a reach or not, because I'll just give you this quick example. When Tim Tebow was drafted, like I was talking to a head coach that same year that they would have taken Tebow in the late 20s. So like people say, oh, hey, that was a reach. It was like, well, somebody else was going to do it too. So maybe they both were reaching, but if somebody else is interested in doing it and you want the player, then you just have to trust your evaluation at that point.
We'll talk with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and head coach of the Ensworth Tigers. Now, Tim, are you surprised that there were 6 quarterbacks that were drafted in the top 12 of this year's draft? Because, you know, before the draft, it was a definite 2. There was a possibility that 3 could get drafted in the top 5, but we knew at least 2 would, and 3 would get drafted in the top 10. but there were six. Are you surprised by that?
I am, and here's why I would say it. Look, Caleb Williams had, you know, uncommon, you know, playmaking ability, but not a perfect prospect. 6'1", you know, 214 pounds, like, honestly, like, smaller than me when I came out. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, then you get Jaden Daniels, it's a similar thing. Like, you know, he's like this tall and lean player. And you guys know how I felt about Drake May. Like, I like that one is the one that made sense to me. You know, Michael Penix Jr., like the injury, you know, history on him is so long that you'd think, well, shoot, like that's got to factor into it somewhere. You know, I think that, you know, some of the interest in McCarthy, you know, became obvious as things, you know, kind of, you know, played out through the evaluation process. And then you go to Bo Nix, like a similar thing, like a guy that was run out of one school because he wasn't playing great. He listed it literally the exact measurements I came out at. Like, and I'm using me as the comp because, like, I went undrafted. Like, typically, D. Mason, you know this, like, the guys that are top 10 picks, top 12 picks, like, they look and feel the part in every which way. And, you know, I think what's so interesting about this draft is that, like, there are six guys, and I think you can make the argument that at least four of them don't really fit the bill.
Hmm. Now, do you think that was because they looked at next year's draft and they felt like these teams, whether it be Denver or Minnesota or Atlanta, especially Atlanta, because they just signed Kirk Cousins, mm-hmm. They looked at next year's draft and thought, listen, this year's quarterback group is better than what next year's quarterback group looks like right now. So we need to take our guy this year as opposed to trying to wait next year to get the guy in. He may not even be there.
Yeah, I think that definitely could be part of it. Because, like, you're right. Like, we don't know. Like, all right, like, how good is Quinn Ewers going to be? And, you know, who are the other guys that are in the mix with him? And they'll, just like there is every year, there'll be a surprise guy that finds himself into the mix because, you know, he has a crazy year and he's draft eligible. So I think that's part of it. You know, they're probably just a volume of guys that had played good football at the college level and felt like good prospects. And then I think, like, you know, part of it is you did and then have to say, like, okay, where do we think we'll be picking? And that's obviously hard to project, but, like, if you're the Atlanta Falcons, with the talent they have on offense, which is really good, with what we think they'll be on defense, and then you add Kirk Cousins, who's basically penciled in for, you know, 28 to 30 touchdowns, fewer than 10 interceptions, 4,500 yards. Like, you're probably not going to have a top 12 pick. And so I think that has a lot to do with why they decided to draft Penix, just because I don't think they believe that they're going to be bad with Cousins playing in an offense that he knows so well.
Now, Tim, we'll talk with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and head coach at the Innsworth Tigers. Now, looking at this draft, which teams, and I'm not asking you to grade the draft because I think it's truly hard to grade so early, but what you can do is look at a team and say, okay, based upon their needs, the guys they drafted, they should have gotten it right. So, based upon what I just said, which team do you think right now got it right? And do you think the Titans are a part of your list of teams that you feel got it right as we speak now?
I think in the current – like, I think it's fair to say, like, the Titans got it right where they are. Like, if you just go, hey, look, they need to get better on the offense and defensive line. That's where they started. They're going to try to see, you know, what they have in Will Levis. Like, so for them – like, I think you have to say, like, yeah, look, you know, you did what, you know, you should do. That makes sense to me. I'll be honest with you. I actually feel like, I think in some ways Atlanta got it right. Mm-hmm. Like, do I really think Atlanta's a Super Bowl, you know, team this year? I don't really, to be honest. Like, and so with that being the case, like, what matters to that new regime there is that they're great this year or they're set up to have some success years 3, 4, 5, 6 and whatever. Like that to me, I think, you know, matters more. So, yeah, I think you just look at, like, some of those situations where you can say, yeah, like, it's fair to say, like, look, I feel like they got it right. And then I think it's fair to say you look at some other spots and say, look, the draft probably didn't go the way they wanted it to go. Like, I look at the Raiders. I love Brock Bowers. Mm-hmm. But there's no way they thought that they weren't going to get a quarterback early on. Like, I just can't think that they thought that all the quarterbacks would be gone before it got to them.
We're talking with ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck. So now that we're done with the 2024 draft, moving on to the 2025 draft, all of the way too early mock drafts have come out. And, of course, you know, like this time last year, we weren't talking about Jaden Daniels as a top three prospect. Mm-hmm. So many things change in a year. But what I was more so looking at is where do some of these insiders project the Titans to pick? Not who they're going to pick, but where they're going to pick. And my goodness, Tim, there is not a lot of optimism for this Titans team. Nearly every single way too early mock draft that I have seen has the Titans either drafting in the top three or trading up to pick in the top three to take a quarterback. And I can't help but think that's a direct indictment on Will Levis. That the national media doesn't believe in Will Levis, that they expect the Titans to be bad and to be picking a quarterback. What is your impression of Will Levis through, you know, the small sample size that we have of him? And what do you think are fair expectations for Will Levis with, you know, Calvin Ridley being added to the receiving core and what we believe to be an upgraded offensive line and an upgraded offensive line coach?
Yeah, I would say this about Levis. I think that he, you know, changed my perception of him, you know, from the preseason into the regular season. You know, typically speaking, guys, you know, don't, you know, struggle in the preseason or have missed opportunities in the preseason and then get an opportunity during the year and play well. So, and I think that, you know, he, like, was it perfect? No. But, like, did he show enough promise? Yeah, I think that he did. And so, you know, what is a reasonable expectation? Like, if you just look at the sample size of 9 games last year where he throws, you know, 8 touchdowns and 4 picks and under 2,000 yards, like, you know, if you just were to say, all right, like, let's go ahead and let's just double the games. So if he throws for under 4,000 yards, 16 touchdowns and 8 interceptions, like, that won't get it done in terms of having the job the following year. It just won't. So, you know, is that realistic? Yeah, I actually think that's realistic. But what do I think needs to happen in order for him to have the job going into the following season? I think he needs to play way better than that. He probably needs to, you know, he needs to be, you know, right around 4,000 yards. He probably needs to have over 25 touchdowns. He probably needs to have, you know, fewer than 10 interceptions. And if he does that, then I think there'll be a chance that he's a starting quarterback going into the following season.
And what do you make of the AFC South as a whole? It's crazy how just 1 year ago we were talking about it being probably the worst division, one of the worst divisions in the National Football League. Now it might be one of the most competitive.
I would agree with that. Here's kind of how I see the division, how I think people will end up talking about the division. Everybody is going to love Houston. Everyone is. Just because the quarterback played well, you know, first year head coach. Just the assumption is that, like, everybody in Houston is going to be better. Whether that ends up being true or not, we'll see. Most likely it's not. But, like, that's the expectation, is that, like, that they are the darling and everyone's going to love them. Mm-hmm. You know, and then it's always going to be tempting to look in Jacksonville and say, man, like, there's a lot to like about the folks in Jacksonville. So you have that. And then you have, oh, by the way, Anthony Richardson, like, let's not have out of sight, out of mind. Like, you know, what do you think that he will be as a player? And so I think just the momentum in the division, and I think that people would probably rank them in that order that I just went through. Mm-hmm. And I think that people would put the Titans, you know, last. I think that is how the division will be viewed. I do think it's a competitive division, but not the most competitive division. And I think the Titans have their work cut out for them.
And Tim Hasselbeck is with us. Just based off of what we know now, because I know that we can couch all of this with, well, we'll see in October or November when we see it in the field. But just right now, where the Titans stand, do you think that it's more likely that Will Levis, you know, has a solid season and begins to give us more hope and optimism that he is a franchise quarterback? or that the Titans will be looking for a new quarterback in the 2025 draft?
I mean, I think it's more likely that they're looking for a new quarterback. Now, saying that, I just would also say this. I think that what they're going to do offensively, you know, just kind of what they're going to hang their hat on, the fact that the talent, I think, is a little bit more proven. Look, I think there is a good chance. Like those benchmarks I talked about of, you know, whatever, north of 25 touchdown passes and all that. Like, I think that's very doable in this offense, you know, for Will Levis. And so I do think there's a chance that he plays well in it. So I just would say, like, look, are you taking, like, Will Levis as the future or the field? Like, I think most people would say, well, like, I would take the field just because of the history of guys not drafted in the first round and how their opportunities typically go. But like, this to me is different than like Aiden O'Connell in Las Vegas. Like, I don't think there's any shot he's their quarterback next year. And I actually think he's a pretty good player, but I do think that there is a decent shot that it is Will Levis going forward in Tennessee.
Tim, I hear there is spring practice on Saturday.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's go. We got a little orange and black, you know, on both sides of the ball. We're, you know, getting set up. It's going to be good. We had middle school spring ball yesterday. Okay.
You see some good prospects in the middle school?
Turnout.
Did you see some good prospects?
Bunch of great prospects. Okay. Bring them out to the high school.
Hey, listen, you know they're going to want NIL, so you better get that pocket full.
Well, listen, that's why, you know, I'm going to reach out to some, you know, prominent alum parents of Memphis school, like Derek Mason, you know.
Get your checkbook ready, D-Mace.
Oh, man, you know, I've been happy to help you, Tim. I'd be happy to help you. So,
yeah,
as long as we're winning.
That's why, you know, like, hey, first top of my list, look, Derek Mason, you know, can't hide money. Can't hide it.
I've got orange slices and Gatorade to donate. That's all I can offer.
Hey, there you go. That's all. Take anything. Anything helps.
No, good stuff.
Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Tim, good luck on Saturday. Appreciate you for stopping by, and we'll catch up next week.
You got it. See you guys.
Yep. Appreciate it, Tim. Tim Hasselbeck, are you going out there on Saturday?
Yeah, I think I have an NFL alumni thing to do, I believe, okay. Saturday. I don't know what time it is. I need to check my schedule. But if it's not early, then I think we should ask him what time it started. I would assume it starts in the morning.
Probably so.
Yeah.
Unless Tim wants to be one of those tough coaches. Yeah. Starts at like 2 p.m.
In the middle of where it's just hot.
In the middle of the heat.
The sun is at its peak and no water, salt pills,
uh-huh.
That's it.
Yeah. When I was in the NFL, this is how we did it. We won championships.
No, that's how your dad did it, not you.
It was your dad's NFL.
And they'll exactly. Have the water troughs off to the side. That's all you get. Yeah.
Yeah.
Been there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have not. I will say I have not, but I can only imagine. All right. We will react to what Tim had to say there. Very interesting. You know, you're going to take Will Levis as the franchise quarterback or the field. He's taking the field. We'll react to that coming up next. Plus, I do want to get D-Mace's thoughts on something that Rand Carthon said on our station yesterday. How much are we going to let ourselves be optimistic about this? Is it, you know, almost the boy who cried wolf at this point, or is there still a shred of optimism? We'll get into that coming up next, and we are to your phones all show long. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, we're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.
Obviously, Treylon Burks, a high pick for you guys, and I know that happened before you were here, but the production hasn't really been there in his career to this point. What have you seen from Treylon to this point in the offseason, and what do you think it's going to take to get him going as you guys head into next season?
I mean, Traylon's having a really good offseason. His attitude and his approach, you know, to the offseason has been excellent. He's been here every day. He's, you know, working extremely hard, you know, especially with our new strength and conditioning staff, you know, led by Zach Woodfin, you know, and now, you know, him getting with Coach Tolbert. You know, the arrow's pointing up on Treylon. Like I said, he's having a really good offseason. And, you know, the big thing for Treylon is staying healthy. you know, staying healthy, staying out there, and giving him more opportunities to get the ball. But I like where Traylon is right now.
That was Titans general manager on Robbie and Rex Road yesterday morning. Caroline Willie D. May. Stay tuned in to 94.9 The Fan today as Vanderbilt baseball takes on Tennessee Tech with the pregame at 5:45 p.m. and first pitch at 6 p.m. Vanderbilt baseball brought to you by Smoky Mountain Tops, your countertop experts. Visit SmokyMountainTops.com. So you heard Rand Carthon saying there, you know, Traylon's having a great offseason. You know, arrow is trending up. All positive things that Rand is saying about Traylon Burks. I also saw some comments that Brian Callahan made that went viral of him talking, him just gushing about Traylon Burks' offseason. And I know that Titans fans are going to latch on to that. And I kind of approach it, you know, have you ever been through a bad relationship and they just continue to disappoint you every single time? And you say, not this time. I'm not going to take you back this time. But then you always just get pulled back in. I'm going to change. I promise. This time's different. I can change him. And then at some point you're like, no, you've done this to me too many times. And I can't go back to you. That's how I feel about Traylon Burks. Mm-hmm. Right now, I'm making this rule for myself. And you can make it for yourself,
too. It's the Traylon Burks rule?
It's the Traylon Burks ex-boyfriend rule. That I'm not convinced that this time is different. Mm-hmm. That there's nothing that you can say to me that how great his offseason has been and how much the arrow is trending up and how great he looks and how hard he's working. Look, I'm sure he is working hard. But I cannot believe it until I see it. Because I believed it last offseason. I did. I thought he was doing everything right. Mm-hmm. He took the Cessna plane back for OTAs. That he told us everything that he's been doing in the offseason. He stuck around in Nashville and had a very regimented plan. He looked different. He sounded more confident. I was sipping the Kool-Aid. And I know it was the injuries that set him back. But for whatever reason it was, he just couldn't stay on the field. And best ability is availability. So I know that there's probably some Titans fans holding on to that hope that Rand Carthon is giving us of Traylon Burks' positive offseason and how good he looks, and I'm sure he does. But my Traylon Burks ex-boyfriend rule, I can't keep going back to you. Not until I see it. Not then can I believe it.
And listen, I'm not going to be a Traylon Burks apologist. I'm not. But I do believe in a kid. Now, listen, I can't try to sort of gloss over or, you know, repaint the picture that he's already painted up until this point. It is what it is. But I do see things in him that makes me believe that he can be a player in this league. Now, I'm not saying that he can be an elite player. I'm just saying he can be a guy that can play in this league that can give you the contribution that you need to win ball games. I look at his last five games of the season. He had no more than three targets in every game. The last five games of the season, he had no more than three targets. You draft a person in the first round, and he's playing out there, and he's playing the plays, and he's not taking, and you only target him three times. I'm glad that last coaching staff is gone. I really am glad they're gone. Good riddance to all of them. They're good people. I'm not talking about them as people. Good people, I know. I'm sure they are. But when I look at stuff like this, yeah, y'all needed to go. We need to get another regime in here that can take the talent that they have and use it. For so long with Tajay Spears, his first year. Where in the hell is Tajay Spears? Why y'all not using him the way y'all should? And then all of a sudden, they start using him. It's almost like they were picking and choosing. Like, okay, this is your game today. This is your game this week. This is your game. No, figure out who your playmakers are and let them make plays. When you draft a guy in the first round and he has made plays for you, but then you only target him no more than three times, in the last five games of the season, no more than three times. You can't then come to me and say, oh, he's not producing. Well, hell, he's not. Yeah, you're right, he's not producing. And you ain't calling plays for him to produce as a player.
And I do have to question, is it like a chicken and egg situation? Uh-huh. Is he not getting the ball because he was dropping passes and wasn't making plays? Or is he not making plays because he's not getting the ball?
I think he's...
He dropped...
He's not he dropped making plays because he's season. Not getting the ball. I look at how... And listen, I go back and I look at this stuff in regards to because I got to be careful when looking at and talking about Treylon Burks, because I want to see, well, did he get the opportunity? One, did he get the opportunity? Is he doing what he needs to do on a front end? Okay, he's had his injuries. I give him that. I get that. And they haven't. I can't say he's a guy that's injury prone because he doesn't have those nagging injuries. Like every week we're talking about, oh, a hamstring, or a quad muscle, something like that. The injuries that he's had, they've been like these fluke injuries, a knee in practice, two concussions. And I've said this, I'm more worried about the concussions than I am the other stuff.
He's had two brutal concussions.
He's had brutal concussions. I'm more so worried about that than I am about those other things. And as far as the drop ball situation, he didn't lead the team in drop. But I can understand when you have a small sample size and then you drop three balls. I think he ended up dropping on the year four balls, maybe that. Mm-hmm. Maybe four, what, no more than four, I don't believe. So you look at it and you say, and then you look at his catches and you say, well, he's dropping more balls than, if you look at it on average, he's dropping more balls than he's catching.
Percentage-wise.
Exactly. But that's not true because he's not getting the volume thrown at him. He hasn't dropped no more than what anybody else would drop if they were to get, say, 50 targets. And I think that's what he ended up getting for the season, like 50-something targets, 60-something targets. And he only dropped three, four.
And it does depend, too, like what is technically recorded as a drop.
Yeah, what's technically recorded as a drop? What is a catchable ball? What do they deem as a catchable ball? All those things I really don't know.
It's more subjective.
Exactly, subjective. But to me, when I look at it, I look at a guy that hasn't been given the opportunity. But even though you haven't been given the opportunity, how did you approach that as a player? Did you get upset? Did you pout? What did you do as a player when they were not giving you those opportunities? I'm going to tell you what he should have did. Should have went up to the office and been like, give me the ball. Flat out. Marvin Harrison even said it. He told his son, like, sometimes you have to scream for the football. Every receiver in the league, if you think you're worth your salt, you scream for the ball when you're not getting it. I screamed for the ball. Give me the damn ball. I was Keyshawn Johnson. Why? Because I knew when you gave it to me, I was going to make something happen. Mm-hmm. Okay? So I'm going to, when I don't get the ball, you damn right I'm going to say, y'all need to give me the ball now. It's been two quarters. Y'all hadn't got me the ball. Somebody give me the ball. Throw me the ball. If you don't, then I'm going to fuss. I am going to fuss. Behind the scenes, I'm going to fuss. I'm not going to fuss out. I'm going to fuss behind the scenes. And y'all going to know it because I'm going to come to you and tell you, get me the ball. I went up to GM's office and said, hey, listen, what's going on here?
I've heard Rick Neuheisel stories.
Exactly. So that has to be trailing. And I know people are probably saying, he can't do that. Yes, he can.
He can absolutely do that.
But the point is, when you do that, you better make do on it. Because when you ask for the football, you better produce when you ask. I don't think he's screaming for the football yet.
Is that a concern?
That
he's not going up to the front office and saying, give me the ball. I want an opportunity.
It could be. And it's all about, again, it's about how you do it.
Yeah.
It's not about you're going up there and screaming and yelling. Because my thing was, I didn't go up there screaming and yelling. But I went up there and said, listen, I can make plays. Y'all have seen it. Y'all know it. That's why y'all brought me in here. Or that's why y'all drafted me and put me in a starting position now. So give me the ball. Like, what's the deal? Okay. The next game, I get the ball eight times. They throw it to me eight times. I catch eight balls. That's just how it is. That's what Treylon has to do. He has to go to the receiver coach and then the offensive coordinator and say, listen, give me an opportunity to prove to y'all I can do this. Because if he sits back there and don't say anything, they're going to forget about him. That's just the way this league is, especially when you're not producing the way they feel you need to be producing. If you're not yelling for the ball or screaming for the ball behind the scenes, they're going to forget about you.
And even if you are yelling and screaming for the ball behind the scenes, if you haven't done anything to earn those catches and to earn those targets, you're not going to get them.
You're right about that. But that's why I said when he does it, then he has – now he's putting the pressure on himself. Because you went out – you went to the coaches, you went to the GM and say, listen, I can contribute. Can I be a part of what's going on? Mm-hmm. How can I be a part of what's going on? How can I be more involved in the offense? All right, we're going to get you more involved in the offense because they will. If you go up to them and you ask them, what's going on in a way that's constructive, the next game, they're going to make sure you're involved, because they want to see if, okay, either you're going to make do on what you said, or we're not going to ever have this conversation again. Because if I go out and I target you and you drop two or three balls, don't ever come to my office again. Don't. I'm just being real. Well, I mean, that's how they think. Like, if you come to my office and you tell me I want the ball more as a receiver, I say, okay, you're right. And I go and I target you, and then you drop balls, I'm not coming back to you.
It's fair.
It's fair.
You have a limited number of times that you can bang on the table for yourself. You have to be able to back it up. If you want to talk that talk, you have to be able to walk that walk.
You have to prove to them that you are worth the spot on this team. And if you don't say anything and just, oh, I'm just going to play, you know, I'm just going to just be the worker and not say anything. Well, go ahead and be the worker. You're going to find your ass out on the street or somebody else's team. You need to verbally talk with them and then physically go out there and get the job done, you know, because you can go out there and do a lot of things in practice, and then you get in the game and they don't show you the ball. They don't throw you the ball. I'm sure Traylon did a lot of things during practice last season, but when he got in the game, he was targeted three times, two times, once, four times. It's like, are y'all trying to win games? What are y'all trying to do here? Because the last I look, he did make plays for y'all. So why aren't y'all giving him the ball? I didn't understand that part. I can understand, okay, he's injured when y'all not getting the ball. But what about when he's healthy? When he's making plays, when the first half y'all target him three or four times and he catches them, and then we don't see him no more in the second half. Whose fault is that? It's not Traylon's fault. It's not like he's sitting back and saying, don't throw me the ball. So whose fault is that? That's why I said, I am glad the last regime is gone. Because now we're going to get a chance to truly see whether Traylon can be a player for this team or not. Because this new regime, it's a clean slate with them. They didn't draft you. They want you to convince them you need to be on this team.
They want him.
Exactly.
Why wouldn't you? He's a first-round draft pick.
Absolutely.
You don't have to worry about that third receiver position.
Mm-hmm.
Then great. There's plenty of other things that this team has to worry about in terms of roster building. So, you know, I see so many texts in the text line, you know, Traylon Burks will have a great year. Unless you have a crystal ball and unless you're a psychic, you can't tell me that he will have a great year. You hope that he has a great year, but hope is not a strategy. So if hope's not a strategy, as far as Traylon Burks is concerned, then what is the Titans' strategy? Or what should it be? We'll get into that coming up next. Of course, with your phones as well. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Caroline Willie D. Mace, 1025-1063 The Game. Caroline Willie D. Mace, tune into 93.3 Classic Hits today as the Nashville Sounds take on the Norfolk Tides at First Horizon Park. Pregame at 6:20, first pitch at 6:35, with coverage also available on 93.3 Classic Hits app and at 93.3ClassicHits.com. Sounds baseball coverage presented by Twin Peaks Family Leisure and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. So we heard a clip from Rand Carthon and Robbie and Rexrow talking about how great of an offseason Traylon Burks is having, how he's trending up, how he's optimistic about Traylon Burks. And look, I have no reason to doubt that Traylon Burks is doing everything in his power, doing all the work, putting all the work in to be great this upcoming season. I have no reason to doubt that. But with that being said, I am adopting the Traylon Burks ex-boyfriend rule of, you fooled me once, you're not going to fool me again. I can't keep going back to you. I can't keep trying to fix you after you've been disappointing me too many times, and I've learned my lesson. And I hope that Traylon Burks proves me wrong. But that's hope.
Yeah,
and hope is not a strategy.
Yeah, you can't bank on hoping, at least in football or in professional sports. That's not going to get you a bigger contract, and that's not going to win you a Super Bowl or be on somebody's team. I'm just looking at this before you finish, because
I
know you have some more to say. He had targeted in 11 games. He missed six games. Because there's 17 games, right?
17
yes,
games.
Yes, I keep on 16, 17. So
soon
17,
to be 18.
Soon
probably.
To be 18, then they're going to get up to 20. Don't worry about it, people, because of the owner, the Goodell says he doesn't like preseason. He came out and said he doesn't like preseason.
Of course he doesn't like preseason. It doesn't make money.
Which tells me they want to get up to 20 games. And so be prepared in years to come that the NFL, they get to 18, they're going to get to 19, then they're going to get to 20. So that's, I believe that's going to happen. But
how many games? It was 16 when you were in the league,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, 16.
Could you imagine playing four more regular season games in addition to potentially four more playoff games? 24 games in a season.
I would have loved it.
You would have loved it?
I would have loved it, yeah, because I enjoy playing.
That's true.
I enjoy being out there.
Yeah.
Because to me, it was fun. It was a game. It wasn't work. I didn't look at it as work. Even though it's a high-pressured industry or profession, it's high-pressured. But to me, it still was fun, and it was never work. Well, that last year did become work. That's why I ended up just retiring. Not because I didn't think I can play, but mentally I was just done. It became work for me. But this man got targeted 30 times last year. 30. Hear me again, people. 11 games he played in. He had 16 receptions. I hope I'm looking at this right because I don't have on my glasses, but I do believe what I'm looking at is true. He played 11 games. He had 16 receptions, 30 targets for 221 yards and not a touchdown. Am I looking at that right? Because I don't have on my glasses.
So, yeah, he had 16 receptions, 30 targets, 221 yards and zero touchdowns.
Yeah. How in the hell can somebody be productive like that? How in the hell can somebody get into a rhythm like that? Listen, I am not naive to think it's all Titans' fault. It was all, even though I'm glad the last regime is gone. I really am. But he has to do his part too.
Yeah.
He definitely has to do his part because there's no way in hell that he should get targeted. 30 times should be in two games or three games. 30 times should be three games, not 11. There was something going on here, at least for me, because I've been there. Like, when you have a starter and you don't target him but 30 times in a year, something's going on. You don't like him. He doesn't like y'all. Y'all are not seeing eye to eye. You nor him nor the offensive coordinator or the head coach. More so, both of them, or more so the head coach, because the head coach can trump all that and say, you know what? Get him the ball. He needs to get him. Why isn't he getting the ball? The head coach can come and say that to the offensive coordinator. And then the offensive coordinator got to give an explanation on why he's not giving the ball.
Do you think Vrabel was part of the problem?
Yep, I do think he was part of the problem. I don't think Traylon was ever his guy. I really don't. He probably didn't expect to have to draft.
Well, you
Traylon.
Know who his exactly. guy was.
His guy was AJ, and I know, and great. He would have been my guy too if I was the head coach, because that dude produces. You don't have to worry about him. But the minute they traded him away, I think it was a ripple effect, not just with John Harbaugh. I mean, yeah, John Robinson, but also with Treylon Burks. I think Treylon Burks felt the after effects. Sort of like the trembles after the earthquake, the small trembles. Treylon Burks has been feeling that the last 2 years, because I don't believe he was the guy they thought they were going to have to draft, at least Vrabel. And then all of a sudden you have to draft him. That's not my guy. I was getting ready to – I wanted to draft somebody else, mm-hmm. possibly a defensive player or something else. I didn't want to have to draft a wide receiver, but you had to because you traded the other guy away. He came in behind the eight ball, at least to me.
And I do think it's double-sided, because I don't think it's the craziest theory that Mike Vrabel would let his own arrogance and his own feelings get in the way of helping the football team. Mm-hmm. Because, look, if Mike Vrabel didn't want to trade A.J. Brown and he didn't want to go that route, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But to hold that grudge against Treylon Burks to the extent that it hurts the football team, I'd be like, that's your downfall there. But also, did Treylon Burks do enough to prove Mike Vrabel wrong?
And that's
Mike Vrabel didn't want to trade it. We're assuming didn't want to trade A.J. Brown and didn't want to draft Treylon
Burks. Oh, sure he didn't want to trade A.J. Brown.
And then Treylon Burks shows up to rookie minicamp and he can't finish the first practice. Well, if I'm already coming in with a bad taste in my mouth mm-hmm. about you, you're not doing much to change my mind.
Vrabel, and again, listen, this is not all Vrabel's doing, and that's not what I'm trying to allude to, because I've also said that Treylon needs to do his part.
Like, it's double-sided.
It's double-sided. He needs to do his part, but I do believe that, and this is only me, I haven't gotten this from anywhere else, this is just me playing the sport, this sport, for as long as I had, and have seen the things that I've saw, that there's no way you draft a guy and he goes from, you targeted him 54 times a year prior, and I get it, he's a rookie, you're trying to acclimate him to what's going on and everything else, so I understand. And then he was trying to get himself in condition, so that probably contributed to a lot of things he wasn't able to do his rookie season. But then he comes back, and out of your mouth, head coach, and everybody else, he came back in the best condition. He was ready to go. He was eager to go. He gets in the season. I know he missed some games early on because of the knee. But then you only target him 30 times throughout the season. Head coaches are aware of everything. They're aware of everything that goes on. There's not a time that he didn't go into that meeting room, that offensive meeting room, and he didn't know that Treylon Burks didn't get targeted more than three times. He went into that meeting room the day after the game, every week. He knew how many times Treylon Burks got targeted. It never changed. So if it never changed, that tells me he really didn't. It was like, okay, it doesn't matter to me. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not my focus. He's not my main focus. My main focus is getting Hop the ball, which would have been mine too. Hop, I don't have to worry about D Hop.
Especially when we're talking about when the transition from Ryan Tannehill to Will Levis.
Exactly.
If I'm a young rookie quarterback making my NFL debut, I'm probably going to fall back on.
Oh
the
yeah, you're
going to
fall back on a veteran guy, and rightfully so. Mm-hmm. But even falling back on a veteran guy, you shouldn't forget about there's other receivers. Within, because if you are able to get the other receivers in the game, offensive coordinator, quarterback, head coach, it makes it easier for the guy you really want to get the ball, DeAndre Hopkins, because he's a playmaker. You get everybody else involved, it's easier for him to get the ball. They didn't do that. Everything was so lopsided. That's why it was hard for them to move the ball last year. Offensive line, but then they knew who you were going to. Mm-hmm. Every play. They didn't have to worry about those other guys. Guarantee you. You look at the scouting report, you will know the majority of the passes go here. They don't go here. They go here. So let's make sure we pay attention to this. He may throw it over here, but don't worry about it. Don't worry about it because he's not getting many targets anyway. But this guy we need to pay attention to. And that's what they did. And they never got out of that. They were so hell-bent or so bullheaded that they didn't realize that we need to start getting other guys the ball. It was the same for the other receivers. They barely got the ball. Not only was your offensive line horrible last year.
Horrible.
But the distribution of the football was horrible. And you can't blame it. Everybody wasn't dropping passes. I can see if you had Kansas City's roster, their receivers, then okay, I can understand why you throwing the ball to Travis Kelce all the time, or why you throwing the ball to Diop. I can understand, but it wasn't like that.
Well, who would be that second person that you would trust behind Diop? Because Chick struggled to catch the football at least early on in the season.
I trusted Treylon Burks because if you look throughout the whole, he had 30 targets. He dropped, let's say, four balls. I think that's what it ended up being, like four balls, I believe. Now, was it more than that? I don't know. I hadn't looked at the drops just yet. But I would tend to believe, because I think D-Hop led the team in drops. I think he had five. But D-Hop is a high volume.
He got more targets.
Yeah, he got
so
more targets.
You're going to have more
drops. And I really only saw him drop one ball, and that was the one in the end zone. And that was a hard catch, but I expect him to catch it because he's made other hard catches.
Yeah.
That's just D-Hop, and he expected to catch it as well. So I don't know where they got the five drops from. I need to really go back and look
for
at
D-Hop?
It. Yeah, for D-Hop, but I know he had one. So I think D-Hop ended up leading the team and dropped passes, but D-Hop got targeted over, 90 times, I believe.
Yeah, he had 137 targets. So if he drops five balls,
exactly, I take that.
Treylon Burks had 30 targets and dropped four. It's over 10%.
It's over 10%.
That's not good.
Exactly.
I wouldn't trust him either.
No. But here's the thing. Here's the thing with receivers, and quickly, because we got to go to break. We are grossly over time right now. Here's the thing about receivers. You get them involved in a game, get them in a rhythm, a guy that can catch the ball. You get him in a rhythm, that's better for him because now he's in a rhythm catching the football. It's like muscle memory, boom, 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 boom. But if you don't, if you target him in the first half or the first quarter and then don't target him into the fourth quarter, I'm not in a rhythm. That's receivers. They're not in a rhythm, just like every, just like a running back. Eddie George, Derrick Henry, they got better the more times they touched the ball. There were games that once in a while they did, you know, rush 10 times to have over 130 yards. Mm-hmm. But when you don't let those guys run the ball, you know, more times than not, they tend to get a little rusty and it takes them a minute. Same with the receivers. You got to keep them involved in the game. And they ain't keep trailing involved in the game.
Well, let's continue this. Because, you know, you can hope that Treylon Burks becomes that guy. You can hope that Treylon Burks gets more of those opportunities and takes advantage of those opportunities. But again, hope's not a strategy. You have to come in with a plan B. If plan A is Treylon Burks works out, well, you know what? You're going to have to come in with a plan B. So what's the plan B? I think we need to revisit a conversation that we had pre-free agency. And we'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.